The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
For me, it was just a simple, I don't want to be who I am anymore. It was, you know, I didn't have anything fancy to bring. I wasn't dressed up. I just remember it was an honest cry for help. And it was, God, I can't do this on my own. I'm sick of being who I am. If there's something here that you can use me.
Multiple Grammy Award winner, singer-songwriter Zach Williams shares his rescue story.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Tammy is not with me today, but she will be back soon. But I'm excited because I have a wonderful guest, a gentleman I've talked to online several times, and I know you've heard him. His name is Zach Williams, and you know, he kind of came onto the Christian music scene back in 2017, a beautiful song, musically and lyrically, called Chain Breaker. And man, you know, I know it blessed so many people's lives. And since then, he's had numerous hits. Just a couple years ago, 2021, he won another Grammy for a song with Dolly Parton called There Was Jesus. And just a gentleman whose life is just blessing people through song. And through his testimony, which I'm excited for you to hear today. He tells it in a new book called Rescue Story, and it is available now. I know it will bless you. Zach, man, so good to see you in person.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know what I love about your story, and I know there are people out there watching right now who have that loved one in their lives who, you know, seems like, man, they're just far from God. And I just want to encourage you today, if you've got someone that you've been praying for, don't stop praying. And Zach, I know you know how true that is.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit of your story.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think this book was really inspired by my mom and dad and just the love that they showed me through this messy life that I lived for a long time. I grew up a church kid, but I didn't live the life that I was raised to live for a long time. But thankfully, my parents, you know, they planted the seed at a very early age. And, I wouldn't have known about, you know, this God that loved me so much that sent his son to die for me. I wouldn't have known about Jesus. And there were a number of years of my life that I ran from, you know, what I know now as a calling on my life. When I was running as far and as fast as I could, God was still, you know, chasing me, pursuing me. And I owe that to my family, you know. And like I said, there was a, you know, when I started thinking about this book, you know, I meet a lot of mom and dads. I meet a lot of grandparents and people at shows, and they've talked to me about you should write a book one day. And me and my wife have talked about it for years. And this past year, it just felt like the right time. And really, my prayer was that, you know, people who have children, you know, loved ones, prodigals that struggle, that were raised in church or maybe not raised in church, that they can read this book and just find hope. You know, to know that it is just prayer. You know, trusting in God and believing and praying and you know, and just knowing that his plans are better than our plans. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of us, I think a lot of people want to pray and immediately see God do something.
Absolutely.
But sometimes it doesn't work that way. You know, I grew up in church, but I was 33 years old when I gave my life to the Lord. And mm-hmm. But I watched my parents and I just watched their unwavering faith, you know, through all those years. And ultimately, you know, I saw just that love of God through them.
So was there anything in particular that made you run, in a sense? Or was it just chasing the world?
It was just chasing the world, you know, thinking I had to be a certain thing to achieve what I wanted. You know, when I started playing music in college, I thought I had to live a rock star life. And I was already partying in college and things like that. And I thought, well, I'll take the party life and add this to music and I'll become a rock star. And it'll be accepted because that's what you do. And I got caught up in that for about 10 to 15 years of my life and carried it into my marriage. And it was just one of those things where I knew that if I didn't change and something didn't happen, I probably wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have my family still. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah. Now, you also talk about in the book an early disappointment. Because when you walked in today, I was like, okay, yeah. this dude's a tall guy,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Right. So you had something that you wanted to do early.
Yeah.
It didn't work out.
Yeah, my dream was to play in the NBA one day, and I wanted to play college basketball. I wanted to go to the NBA and play, but I lost, like I said, I lost that track of all the things that my parents had taught me and raised me to be, and I got involved in drugs and alcohol and in, my early high school years, and by my senior year of high school, I had some Division I basketball scholarship offers and schools talking to me, and those all quit. I ended up getting in trouble for drug use my senior year, and I dropped out of high school. I got my GED, and I went to work for my dad, and I thought my life was over. I was working construction at that time thinking it was gone. I'll never get another chance. And then a year later, I walked on to a college and made the team and got a full scholarship.
Uh-huh.
But then I tore my ankle up the day before season started, but that's where the guitar came in. I picked the guitar up, I think out of kind of sheer boredom. I didn't have anything else to do, and this guitar was in our apartment, and I remember picking it up. And immediately, being like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. What was crazy was my dad had played music growing up my entire life and led worship. So there was a guitar in our house. There was a music stand in our house. I guess it was in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But until I couldn't play sports, I was like, but as soon as I held it, I was like, okay, there's something here. And it was just one of those things.
Where did that lead? Because, you talk about several years where you were out chasing your own musical dream at that point. What did that look like?
It was pretty rough. I mean, I was a pretty reckless guy. I didn't, at the time, wasn't thinking about the next day. I wasn't thinking about anybody involved. Wasn't thinking about myself, honestly. I was just living, and I was just one of those guys that, was 110%. And if there was a party, I was going to be the best at the party, and it didn't start or stop until I got there or left. And that was just how I lived for a number of years. But when I made the change to live for Jesus, that's how I've been living since, and so.
That's a great story, by the way.
Thank you.
As far as what happened. So tell people what happened, because you're on the road, you're in a secular band, right?
Yep.
So you're doing the music thing, you're doing the party thing, and God steps in.
Yeah, my wife and me had kind of had this moment before the tour started in 2012, and she said, if you can't make some changes for your family, like, we can't stick around. She said, it's not looking good, and I knew enough about the Lord being raised in church. I knew God was real. Obviously I had my own questions and wondered if he could save me and, if I could be forgiven for some of the things that I'd done. And I just said, God, if you're real and who you say you are, prove it. And if you prove it to me, I'll walk away from everything that's going on in my life. And we were in Europe about 2 weeks into this tour. And, I was staring out the window of a bus one day driving down the highway in Spain, and a guy was scanning radio stations driving our bus, and I hear a song by Big Daddy Weave called Redeemed that come across the radio, and the song just hit me, and I in that moment just realized all these years in church, I'd missed it. I had this idea growing up as a kid that I thought God kind of sit with his arms crossed on his throne, just kind of shaking his head and looking at everything I did wrong, and I realized in that moment that he sees me in a way that I'll never see myself. And I remember calling my wife and saying, you're not going to believe this, but I'm done. And when I came home from that tour, I gave my life to the Lord in the closet of our, in the floor of our closet in our house on June 10th of 2012. And we found a church. And within a year, I started working for the church, leading worship. And it's where it all went to. Ended up in a book. So here we go.
The thing I want anybody who may be watching who is out living your own life, pursuing your own dreams and things like that, we talk about this idea of repentance. And it is absolutely necessary. But it tells you it's not telling you the truth. But what did that look like for you?
It was just a simple, I don't want to be who I am anymore. I didn't have anything fancy to bring. I wasn't dressed up. I just remember it was an honest cry for help. And it was, God, I can't do this on my own. I'm sick of being who I am. If there's something here that you can use me. Mm-hmm. If I don't play music, I'm fine with that. If I do, that's awesome. But I want to be a good husband, father. I want to know you. And I remember putting music down for 6 months and just completely set it aside and started working on my relationship with God and my family. And, out of that season of life of just, waiting and listening and seeing what God had planned for me, the music came back, you know, and God started giving me an opportunities to do things that I dreamed of, you know, and then opened the doors for things that I could never imagine. And so that was really how it started for me.
Yeah, no, and I definitely want to talk about that. But you know what? I like what you say. You laid it down. Yeah. That element of surrender. Sometimes we think, oh, I got to do something. Well, in a lot of ways, it's doing nothing. It's laying everything down. So here's a question, because you had this sort of misconception that a lot of people have that, you know, God's the guy just waiting to get you, waiting to tell you how bad you are, punish you for all your sins, maybe or maybe not forgive you. What did you sense from God when you laid everything down and just surrendered yourself to Him?
I think what I've sensed then and what I still sense now, and I think it's easy to beat yourself up, you know, as Christians. I think a lot of people have a misconception of you know, you have to have it all together. You have to have it all dressed up and perfect before you can bring it to God or come to church. That's not true, you know? And then I think people think that once you give your life to the Lord, then automatically everything is perfect. Right. And it's not, you know, we're never going to have it figured out. I won't, you know, but God does. And that's why He went to the cross for us, you know, and that's why He sent His Son to die, so that we don't have to have it all figured out. And I think there's just a beauty and freedom in knowing that it's all right if you fail and, you know, get it right. Like, you've got tomorrow, and it's really not how you start the race. It's how you end it. And for me, I just feel like, you know, my worst days, you know, with God are better than my best days without Him. You know what I mean? And I feel like I have somebody walking with me through all this, and I'm not alone. So
no condemnation.
Yep.
Love.
Yeah.
All there.
Yeah.
Now, this was something that you didn't know it at the time, but your dad told you later.
Yeah.
There were some words spoken early.
Yep.
That came true.
Yeah. You know, it was a story that I didn't start telling until recently. And then it was really kind of what, you know, it was a big part of this book. It opens the book. And basically, my parents, you know, met in high school and got married young and went through a very similar lifestyle that me and my wife went through. There was a time in their life where there was, you know, quite a bit of partying going on. And when my mom was ready to slow down and start a family, I don't think my dad was quite ready yet. And they ended up separating for some time. Hmm. And, you know, my dad found the Lord, and it brought him and my mom back together. And they made a promise to raise their children in church, you know, when they started their family. And they decided that they would move away from Arkansas, where they'd grown up, and kind of get away from some of the people that they'd run around with. Mm-hmm. And dad decided he wanted to go to a Bible college in Pensacola, Florida. And so they were going to school down there. And then a couple years later, I was born, and they decided to have me dedicated. And so my dad and me are on his job site one day, and I'm, you know, 33 years old, and we sit down to take a lunch break, and he tells me he's got to share a story that he's never shared. And he said, you know, when you were born, we had you dedicated at his church. And I said, yeah, I remember you telling me that. He said, well, what I didn't tell you is as we were walking down to the front of the aisle, you know, you were screaming and crying and making all this noise. And the pastor said, sounds like Zach's got a strong set of lungs. He'll probably be a singer one day. And everybody laughed. And he said, but then the pastor got really serious and looked at him and said, this child will be a voice for his generation. And, you know, I'm sitting there in tears, you know, on this construction site, and my dad and me are crying. And I was like, Dad, you know, why didn't you tell me this? And he said, well, I didn't want to put any pressure on you, you know. And the thing was, is he said, you know, we watched you grow up as a kid and never showed any interest in music. And we always wondered, you know, what the pastor meant by that. He said, but you were always, you know, a natural leader. People seemed to follow you. And then you came home in college and you took my guitar back and said you were going to teach yourself how to play. And he was like, I didn't think anything about it, you know, other than you just don't pick up a guitar at 20 years old and start playing music. And he said, then you came home from school and you were really good and you were singing and you were writing songs. But then you got in this band. And he said, you lived this life that, you know, me and your mother hadn't raised you to live. And so my parents, they would come sit in these smoky bars, you know, night after night after night. And they would just pray that God would take all of this one day and use it for His glory. And so he said, when you started playing me these songs that you're writing now and this, you know, stuff that you're writing for the church, he said, I'm not telling you to put any pressure on you. I'm just telling you because God's given you a gift. And, you know, this is the platform. You know, he's allowed you to live through and walk through a lot of these dark days to stand on this stage and, you know, just share with the world how good he is and what he wants for you. And so that was kind of one of those moments where you're just kind of like, okay, you know, I never like to share that because I don't want people to think I'm like going, oh, look at me. It's all about, you know, God chose me. I don't feel chosen at all. I feel honestly unworthy of it most days because I know how I can mess it up and get it wrong more than I get it right. But it just goes to show that God can take the messiest parts of your life, you know, and turn it into a message. And he can do that with anybody, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's what this book for me represents. It's, you know, just read it. You know, I'm hoping that anybody that struggles can find something in there to hang on to.
You know, Paul told Timothy, whom he was mentoring, take hold of the eternal life to which you were called. And that's saying, look, what God's put in you now on this earth, grab a hold of that.
Yeah.
Go after it. And there's, I mean, that's not our own doing, as you know.
Yeah.
And we don't have to be perfect to do it. But, man, when we take hold of what God's put in us and use it to bless others, I'm guessing Chainbreaker was not just a nice tune that rhymed a little bit.
No.
This is a testimony.
It was, and it, honestly, I don't even feel like I wrote the song. I remember the day I wrote it. It was a Friday afternoon. I was ready to go back to Arkansas. I was still living in Arkansas, and I'd been writing all week. I was still working at the church that I was, you know, leading worship at, and I'd already written all the songs that week that I thought I could write. You know, I didn't have any lyrics, any ideas, and I shared my story with a guy named Jonathan Smith and a girl named Mia Fields for about 2 hours. And when I finished, Mia said, "You need to write a song called Chainbreaker." And as Jonathan was playing the piano, I just said, "If you've been walking the same old road for miles and miles," and they looked at me like, "What did you just say?" And I was singing it, and I was like, "Was that pretty good?" And they were like, "Yeah, you got more?" And I was like, "I don't know." And we just kind of got out of the way, and that song wrote itself in about 15 minutes that day. And the vocal that's ended up being on the record was from that little demo. I couldn't sing it better if I tried. I tried 3 or 4 more times when we recorded the record, and I never beat what I did the day we wrote it. It was just one of those God things where it was like, and I remember driving home 4 hours after that and just going, "God, if you will, take this song to the farthest corners of the earth and find the people that need to hear it." And he has, you know, and it's just been so cool and humbling to see, you know, what God can do and how when you have a prayer for something, God hears that prayer and he uses it the way you intended. It's pretty unbelievable.
So what do you tell that parent or grandparent who shows up to your shows? Is that, I know you're touring now, but and they're like, "Man, I didn't raise my kid that way." Or maybe I didn't raise them in a Christian home, whatever the case may be. There's somebody I'm praying for. What do you say to them to encourage them?
I just say to keep praying, you know, and to hang on to that, you know. That's the whole thing. Like, man, God hears our prayers, you know. And I see people every night at my concerts, you know, that I know would not be sitting in that concert had it not been for a mother or father or grandma or grandpa's prayer. Yeah. You know, that one prayer that got through to them, or that one prayer that changed the course or direction of their entire life, you know. And that's it, you know, just standing in your faith, unwavering, and just believing and trusting in God for you know, deliverance for your children and for your loved ones and for whatever you're going through in life. It's,
do you ever thank your parents?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're pretty proud. So, I thank them all the time. It's pretty unbelievable to look back where I was, you know, 10 years ago and to see where I am now.
Mm. Yeah. Dude, I love the testimony.
Thank you.
You keep telling it. You keep writing that. I love your vocals. I love your music. There's that. That's a great bonus. And if you're watching and you haven't checked out Zach's music, you can go to his website and check that out. Tour information's there. It's all great. But, you know, when we talk about this idea of a rescue story, man, there's so many people in this world that need that touch from God. And just like Zach's out touching people right now, you know, with his music and his testimony and his encouragement, you have the ability to touch someone right now in a faraway place. Someone that needs rescue, someone that needs a touch from God, someone that needs a touch from another believer. Watch this, and I want you to see how you can be a rescue story in someone's life today.
ودرا كوزي إنو غرابي سخن غرابي إدي من النو أفدي دبسي إنو غرابي باتيغا ورغولي قالا وانا من غب أين جن بيدان قدان ننو بنسوغني أين بيدان غبو بكا رودا ركو دا باقا هندي سرم دغران جان دم سلسة فايدي سريبانا إيه جاقود قالا دي ديسا كاريت تنجو min so sene serfa ye bo hanin ni dam min ni sere gara gallan.
I want you to know that I hear you. I hear everything you're saying. And I'm so sorry that you are going through this. I'm so sorry. She's waiting for somebody to reach out. And if we can't come today, then she'll wait till tomorrow. If we can't come tomorrow, then she'll wait another day. That's what the problem is. They can't wait till tomorrow. They can't wait another day. They have nothing. Could you even imagine what that must feel like, the weight that that must feel every single day? You have nothing. The sadness, it's deep. It's really, really deep. Because I don't know how many tomorrows they have.
So many people waiting, praying. We can be the answer. We must be the answer. Look, when our people rolled into Ethiopia there, and we saw the signs we've seen in many different places, the malnutrition, you can see it on the children. You can see it, obviously, on the crops that have failed. This is a classic situation where malnourishment has already taken hold, and we know what happens then. Starvation, death. We need to intervene. Through your help, we are feeding 350,000 children every day across crisis areas, primarily in sub-Saharan Africa, even up in Eastern Africa. But in this new area, we need to do something immediately. They are waiting, but they can't wait long. When we look at the mission feeding program and its effectiveness, we have so many things in place that we are able to respond quickly. But it's only through your action, through your support, that we can expand the work that we're doing. The numbers break down like this. For a gift of $30 today, you can help feed three children for the next 3 months. And that's only possible because of the people and the processes that we already have in place. They are waiting to go. They're just waiting on us to tell them, don't wait any longer. Go help these people. Here are the supplies. Here are the funds that you need to mobilize immediately. A gift of $50 will help feed five children for the next 3 months. A gift of $100, many of you can do that. That will help feed 10 children. And some of you can help feed 100 children for the next 3 months with a gift of $1,000. Many of you can do more. I hope that you will say that prayer, not the prayer that these mothers and grandmothers are saying of, God, please help us, but God, what can I do? That's the prayer that we who have must pray so we can give to those who don't have. Right now, there are many people with these little bowls. You've seen them on TV if you've watched Life Today over the years. They are waiting. They are praying. They are asking God for help. We need to put the food in the bowl, to put in the hands of those who desperately need it. You are the answer to their prayer. So take a moment. Say, Lord, what would you have me do? And then obey. That's all He asks of us. He wants our obedience, and our obedience turns into action, and our action turns into answered prayers for those in need. So please go online, go to the phone, however you prefer. Make the gift that God puts on your heart. Together, we can be that answer to their prayers, and they won't have to wait any longer.
Right now, across the continent of Africa, children are suffering, facing severe malnutrition, and even death. Severe drought and famine, including in crisis areas like Ethiopia, means we must replenish food supplies immediately to keep feeding 350,000 children and help reach more people in desperate need. Through Life's Mission Feeding Outreach, your gift of love can be an answer to prayer for a hurting and hungry child in their time of need. Call now with your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 to help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. With your gift of any amount, we'll send the blessing of taking communion. In this book, discover how the sacred ordinance of communion helps to feed your soul and remind you of the transformative power of receiving the Lord's Supper. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request the Life Legacy Journal. This beautiful journal and pen will help you write your personal story and share the experiences that made you who you are. One day, the generations that follow will be able to look back and learn from the legacy you've left behind. Finally, with your gift of $1,000 or more to help feed and care for 100 children, be sure to request our inspiring bronze sculpture, A Cup of Water. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I do hope you're going online, going to the phone, making the best gift you can. You really can rescue someone today. And if you want Zach's book, Rescue Story, just request it when you make any gift towards Mission Feeding. We'd love to get that in your hands. Man, Zach, I so appreciate you and your
Thank
testimony.
You.
Just keep encouraging people.
Thank
There's
you.
Somebody watching. What, something you want to just leave them with today?
Yeah, I would say, pray for your kids. You know, trust God for all things. I'm living proof that prodigals return.
Mm, yeah, you know what? We've got a prayer line. If you want somebody to pray with you right now, you dial that number. We will pray with you. We will believe with you and encourage you. Because a God is a good God, and He's waiting there with open arms for all of us to come back to Him. Thank you for being here. We'll see you again next time on Life Today.
Somehow I am blessed with this unapologetic courage to hope.
Comedian Shonda Pierce opens up about love, loss, and lunacy. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.